City Current. Produced by Dakota Media Access. In-depth discussion with Bismarck and Mandan city officials. Watch on Government Access Channel 602 HD or tune in to Radio Access 102.5 FM. Always local, always current.
Welcome to City Current. It is Wednesday, July 15th, and I'm Mary Van Sickle. I'm here in the studios at Dakota Media Access. It's a Bismarck edition of City Current. That means Jason Tomonic is here from the City of Bismarck. And also joining us today is Gabe Schell, City Engineer for the City of Bismarck. Welcome, both of you.
Thanks, Mary.
Good to see you this morning. Had a commission meeting last night, went fairly long, so we've got a few things to talk about. But before we get too deep into all of the elements of the City Commission meeting, we thought we'd talk with Gabe a little bit about a couple of items and then get a update on the road construction projects that are going on this summer here in Bismarck. Welcome, Gabe.
Hi, Mary. Thank you for having me.
All right. Last night on the commission meeting, we'll start with that item, and that was an area that you don't normally get involved in, and it has to do with an event that's coming up in August by a group called Medieval Rush. They're going to have their event in August up at the Community Bowl, a new location for them. And the reason you were involved is, tell me why. Why were you so involved in this project, Gabe?
Yeah, the reason I guess the city got involved in this particular event is because the applicant was wanting to use some of the city's property to run their race. So it's a beautiful area and a beautiful area for an event. But then we just need to be careful about the use that's going to be occurring there and making sure that we can do that in a safe manner and in a sustainable manner that doesn't have any adverse effects to the city and the public's property. So that I was put in a role to help figure out how to host an event or allow an event on our property without impacting the serene nature that's there or any of our facilities in that area.
Yeah, and this item actually had come up at a previous city commission meeting. They had proposed it. It was discussed by the commissioners. There were a few questions, some objections by a local biking club that has maintained some trails up in that area. And at that meeting, it was directed to you and staff to come back and resolve some of these issues. So in the interim, you had an opportunity, as I understand, to meet with the biking club and the organizers of Medieval Rush and kind of come together with a plan.
Yeah, thankfully, we were able to kind of put our heads together collectively between the biking group that maintains those trails as well as the event organizer to kind of come up with a plan that would allow a use of what establishes a 5K event out there. But on terrain that wouldn't impact the existing trails that are there. So thankfully, we were able to find a route that won't be impacting the existing bike trails that are there, as well as, I guess, not impacting any of our property to a degree that is irresponsible.
Josh just popped up the map number one right now on the screen, and that really shows the route that will be planned if there is a, as I understand it, this is if there is a dry event, no rain coming in, this is the route that they're going to follow. Is that correct?
Yep. So it's interesting because if in our construction world of things, if it's rain, that those are usually days that you wouldn't want to do any activities out there because that could induce erosion or unsettlement of the slopes. But if it's an event that wants to get wet and wants to play in the mud, then that's kind of right up their alley. So we're just trying to find a way that could work for both. So we have two map events or routes, I should say. One, if it's been even not raining that day, but just raining in the days previous and that just the course isn't in a good condition and we don't want people running up and down hillsides that might have, you know, be water soaked or anything along those lines. So we have a course for a wet event if it does turn out to be inclement weather during that time frame, and then a course for if it's dry in the days leading up to, including the day of the event.
All right. Sounds good. So that got a go last night from, I think it was a unanimous by all the commissioners to move forward on that one, right?
Yep, it was unanimously approved, and our contract has a insurance requirements that the event organizer has to put forward, as well as a bond security deposit, if you will, that in the event that there is damage, that the city is able to remedy that through the use of that bond to hire a contractor to fix whatever might get broken. But our main intent is to make sure we don't let anything get broken in the first place.
Sounds good. Gabe, at this point, we'd like to talk a little bit about the road construction projects that are going on in the city. You were with us a few episodes earlier and talked about it at the earlier part of summer and what we could expect, but now we're pretty heavy into a lot of projects, so really appreciate your time and coming, because I know you've got a lot of balls in the air right now juggling around these projects. So if you could give us kind of an overview of what's happening and what the timelines are and what we can expect in the next few weeks.
Sure, I'll share my screen here. So this map is, you can find, anyone from the public has access to this GIS map that's on our bismarcknd.gov/streets page. I'll highlight a couple of our construction activities that are kind of happening at this point, most likely to affect the daily driver, the daily commuter, the daily resident or business owner. The first being our Main Avenue project, represented by these intersections between Mandan and 7th Street. That project is continuing in full force. Most recently, we're erecting our last traffic signal system at 6th and Main here shortly, and we're currently finishing up any concrete work on the corridor, as well as putting in the permanent pavement markings. That's quite honestly the thing I'm most excited for, is just that clear lane designation of where the drivers are supposed to go. Certainly a challenge from the 4-lane highway that was there before to this 3-lane trial period that we really started that demonstration in 2016 and have just been trying to maintain with paint over that course of time. So thankfully we'll have now a corridor with grooved in pavement markings that should be really visible and will stand the test of time for at least the next 5 to 10 years life expectancy of those pavement markings. So looking forward to that project wrapping up here within the month of July is what we're anticipating here. Another project that most drivers would probably know is going on just because of the impact to traffic is represented by these blue lines. This is our water main replacement project that we're doing in our downtown area. Most of the water mains between 5th and 9th is what we're working on at this point in time. North of Rosser, generally speaking, are being replaced with a trenchless technology, a bursting process. But in order to do that, we have to string out a block or two lengths worth of water main and then pull that water main through the existing conduit that was the old water main. So it's kind of a process to do it. And then as we reestablish all those services, we do have to dig into the ground to do that. But we do see traffic impacts on 7th and 9th, most notably 9th at this point in time, as we have to close that to one lane of traffic or two lanes of traffic where there's typically three or something along those lines, just to give the contractor some room to safely work and construct those facilities. So we appreciate the public's patience as we work through those. And these are old water mains from early 1900s, and we're putting in brand new technology that hopefully will last the next 100 years, and we don't have to dig in the street for this reason anyway, for the next 100 years anyway. Another project that is moving along, and it's can't really, not any pictures to show, but our 43rd Avenue reconstruction project between Washington Street and State Street did their first couple of concrete pours. They're pouring out there today as well. One exciting thing and kind of new and innovative about this project is we are working with the contractor to allow them to use a stringless paving machine. So typically the paving machine that is placing that concrete runs along a string line that controls its elevation and its horizontal alignment. So it puts that concrete at the right spot relative to where the roadway will be. The contractor approached the city to see if they could use some newer technology and do this with GPS control and total stations and more survey equipment, and we've allowed them to do that on this project. So it's kind of exciting and innovating. It's something that the DOT has only done one time in the entire state, and so we get to be one of the first projects to try that solution out, and we've had pretty good success initially here. So the good thing about putting concrete on the ground is that will then allow us to start driving on that concrete, even in the construction state, We won't have to use our temporary roads and our gravel roads and things of that nature that we've installed on the eastern part of the project. And we can just start using the concrete once it's set and we've attached our curbs to it and it's ready to go for traffic. So looking forward to that taking place in the next couple of weeks, we can switch traffic over. But the road would still be closed from Washington Street to Coleman until we have all of the lanes established through that section. And the last project I want to hit on a construction update is in Divide Avenue near Sleepy Hollow Park. This also was a full reconstruction between Volk Drive on the east side and 26th Street or thereabouts on the west side of the project, and replacing the asphalt street with a concrete street. So today it's one-way traffic, only one direction allowed, but soon on the next weeks or so here, we'll allow traffic on the concrete after it's had its time to cure and get enough strength. And then we'll allow two-way traffic on that project as we work around then the traffic to finish up the remaining items. So I know the residents or anyone who used Divide before and the inconvenience that's caused by these detour routes that we have established will certainly be a thing of the past and so in the near future. So we certainly appreciate everyone's patience on that as well as we disrupt their daily drives. And that's, I guess, for the most part, all I have for a construction update, but would take any questions that you might have, Mary.
Well, you already answered my one question about the water main replacements. It's amazing that those water mains had lasted 100 years up until this point. That's pretty incredible. I think the other thing about Main Avenue, and good to see that all happening, and there's so much construction with the Patterson going on through their renovation as well, that it's quite a beehive of activity. But the other advantage of the Main Avenue road diet that it's gone through is that the parking is wider along Main Avenue. You have a wider parking allowance for cars, and I think that's been a real benefit. I've noticed quite a bit for years working and shopping downtown, getting out of your car on Main Avenue was always a little dicey. And now it seems to be a little more comfortable by if you're parking, parallel parking on Main Avenue. So that's really been a nice benefit. So looking forward to that one being done as well. A question on 43rd Avenue. As I recall, that the east of State Street is also slated for improvements as well. What's the timeline on that next step for 43rd Avenue?
Sure. Our next project that we'd be using the half-cent sales tax for would be the next segment of 43rd Avenue, which, as you had said, is east of State Street and west of 26th Street. So we'll plan on constructing that pending funding and availability in 2022. It will be the year that we would be converting that roadway to a three-lane, five-lane, something yet to be determined as we start kicking off our initial analysis and working through the issues and seeing what the needs are of that particular segment of the corridor. Burley County will be constructing their segment of 43rd Avenue between 26th Street and Roosevelt Drive, which is east of Centennial Road. They'll be doing that next year. So that'll be a mile and a half that they'll be reconstructing that as a facility similar to North Washington Street north of 57th Avenue, where it'll have street lighting, a shared use path, and then a three-lane rural section. So with ditches and highway ditches and culverts and things of that nature. But that'll be a segment that should last us the next 20 years from a capacity statement, capacity view as well.
You mentioned 57th Avenue and the Costco new company coming in is getting everybody excited because they're slated to open, I believe, next month. A lot of activity going on up on State Street there. Do I understand that is a state road project, or is that a project that the city has been coordinating?
Sure. That specific project is through the city. It's on the state's highway of Highway 83, but the improvements of some turn lane modifications at Brookside Lane, as well as the improvements at 57th for turn lanes and traffic signals and then corridor lighting along that entire stretch of 57th is funded through the city and a cost share with Costco. So that project is done on the state's right-of-way, but it's a city project. Interestingly enough, the state is also doing their own overlay on US 83 from Calgary Avenue in town up to near Wilton. So that entire corridor is kind of under construction in different phases, but certainly Once again, appreciating the public's patience as we work through those construction projects this time of the year.
Yeah, that's my daily route a couple times a day. So I've seen that as well. So the 57th Avenue Costco area, is that fairly well completed, Gabe? Is there a lot more left to do in that area as far as the roads?
So we have contractual obligations to have most of those improvements done by August 1st. The exception to that will be the traffic signal, that the lead time on some of those permanent traffic signal systems just take a lot longer, upwards of a year of time for when the project's awarded. So we'll have a temporary system set up at 57th and 83 that allow for traffic to get into and out of Costco's main driveways there once they're up and running. And then we'll take that temporary system down once the permanent system components arrive and are constructed later this fall.
Oh, good to know. Okay, so there'll be a light system on that intersection right there, right?
Yep, from the get-go, that'll be an improvement that'll be on the ground running before Costco opens their doors to the public.
Nice. You're a busy guy, Gabe.
A lot of fun things going on.
So you mentioned your map and you were showing us around there, and I think that's really a revealing map. You mentioned you can get to it on the website. It's bismarcknd.gov, correct? Yep. Go to the engineering department. You can access your GIS maps there. So you can find all those road projects and you can set up some filters to kind of drill into what you want to look for. But I would assume people can call your office as well if they have questions. I'm assuming you don't want your personal cell phone number on there, but call the City of Bismarck, 355-1300, and you can access the engineering department for your questions.
Yeah, and I guess if you have a question specific for our department, our direct dial to our department is 355-1505. So as soon as that rings, it'll send you to the appropriate person who can hopefully answer that question for you.
All right. Well, stay on it. You're doing a great job. Lots of activity this summer, and I think it's all worth it. In the end, we get updated water mains and better roads, but we have to put up with the road construction in the meantime. So I again, your message of please be patient, I think can't be said enough. Thank you, Gabe. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
All right, take care. So Jason, you and I are gonna talk a little bit about the rest of the meeting last night. There were a couple items in the consent agenda that were not pulled for discussion, but I just thought it'd be nice to mention that the downtown street fair was on the consent agenda, asking again for permission to close the streets in September for the downtown street fair. And I think it's interesting. People want to know, is the street fair going on? And at this juncture, as I understand from the Downtown Association, that yes, they are planning on the street fair mid-September.
Yep. Excuse me, that's correct, Mary. Annually, the downtowners, of course, host the street fair, but of course, prior to that, annually request permission to close the streets. So the areas that we're generally talking about, 5th Street, Broadway, portions of 4th Street, portions of 3rd Street, the kind of the core area of downtown. And we're certainly excited to know that they're looking at moving forward, and I suspect that they're still working out some of the details, as a lot of things are right now, given the current situation that we have in the world, really. But it's nice to see that some of the things that we look forward to annually are still available and are being planned to move forward. I know our community does a really nice job of supporting the vendors and the downtowners organization by attending the street fair. Some people might come downtown just once a year to get their hands on that big turkey leg, but that's great because that's just one more feature that makes Bismarck so special and so unique. So,
yeah. I also noticed reading through the agenda packet prior to the meeting that they are asking for an additional space for the street fair this September, and that would be, they're going to go, as I understand from now, at this point, they're going to go over 3rd Street over to 2nd. The Broadway Street Fair will go all the way to 2nd Street, but 3rd Street will remain open for traffic. So they are preparing for more distancing between vendors to allow more space. So good to see that. And as I understand, I think it's September 18th and 19th, which is a Friday and Saturday for the downtown street fair. So
yep.
Until further notice, the plans are in place and it's moving forward. If anything changes, I'm sure there'll be plenty of public announcements regarding that. Another fun thing on the consent agenda just had to do with Camp Hancock hanging some new banners. And I noticed in the packet they had their design for their new banner in there, and Josh just popped it up on the screen. It's really nice, showing the railroad, that engine that they've got there. And so we'll see new banners over by Camp Hancock.
If it wasn't for Camp Hancock, Bismarck wouldn't be here. You know, that's really where Bismarck got its start, thanks to the railroad, of course. So it's nice that we can recognize history. And I know the state's done a really nice job making some improvements to that space in the last several years. So if that's one more way that we can draw attention to some of the unique features downtown, I think that's great that we're able to support that.
And you would know all this because I heard last night that you were given the name of Mr. Bismarck because you have all this history in your head. You've studied all these things. So,
yeah, and we used to joke when Carl Hockenstead was around that he was our city historian, because Carl knew much of this. Of course, he spent more than 40 years working for the city, and I was the junior historian studying under Carl, and now that Carl has retired, and I'm sure he's enjoying those that free time, I guess it's my turn to step into that role, and I would gladly accept that moniker. I appreciate knowing that people appreciate whatever I can offer as far as Bismarck goes. And just sidebar here, of course, I'm sitting in my office at City Hall, and as I look around and train my eyes off the camera, I've got my own little museum of all things Bismarck in here. So I guess I've earned that nickname. I'll gladly accept it. And as Kate Herzog from the Downtowners emailed me this morning, she was paying attention to the meeting last night as well. And Kate said, well, the city attorney has now called you Mr. Bismarck, so it's legally binding. So I guess I'll accept it. I'll appreciate it. And I'll gladly wear that that title for a long time.
Yes, and I've been in your office before, and I'm looking at you right now, sitting at your desk, and behind you are some watercolors. I believe Rick's Prince and Attic did most of those, or did all of them.
Did all of them, yeah.
They're landmark buildings in the community. So, yes, yep. you are now our historian.
And these, I'm proud to say that these are original watercolors that Rick did. That was something that I was able to do about 4 years ago when I started in this office, is through Eileen Walsh, former director at Dakota West Arts Council. She connected me with Rick, and I was able to purchase some of his original watercolors that he had done in the late 90s, early 2000s. And I'm so proud of these, and people love looking at them. And I deliberately set my camera up this way so they were in the shot today. So thanks for noticing.
We appreciate your artwork, absolutely. And certainly the artwork of Rick's Prince and Attic. He's done those landmark buildings, but I know he also has done a number of private homes.
Mm-hmm.
That same style of that watercolor. So yeah, they're beautiful.
Yep, absolutely.
So let's talk about a couple of big items that were on the regular agenda last night and had a lot of discussion. And one of them was the budget 2021. And this is a process that starts in March and it goes all the way through August into September before it's finally approved. So this was the next big step, and it was a big step. Your finance director, along with Commissioner Marquardt, started the presentation with a very detailed explanation of the funds, the general funds, the enterprise funds, the variety of funds that come into the city's budget, and how they operate and what the restrictions are on those particular funds and what they provide the revenue, what function of the city it provides revenue for. So that was very interesting, and you know, it's all part of the agenda packets that go out. It's all part of, it's online if people want to see it on your website, and certainly it's recorded in the meeting if people want to get a nice tutorial on that. And I think that was a good starting point for the budget explanation. And from that point, then there was discussion. So bottom line for us, Jason, where did it go?
Absolutely. And I would encourage anybody that is interested in the budget process to go back and pick up on the replay or the rebroadcast of the meeting from last night. We certainly can't capture all of those components in this little synopsis here, but appreciate you recognizing enterprise funds, general funds. That's a true distinction in government financing, and it's a little different than personal finances. What we refer to as the general fund are simply those departments that operate based on property tax. The other departments we have are enterprise funds. Those are departments that essentially generate their own money through services provided and fees charged. And it's probably easier to list the enterprise fund departments because there's a smaller number of them. But when we look at water and wastewater, they have a very, very good financial plan where they take in a little more money than they expend every year and then essentially set aside those extra cash reserves, knowing full well that there are major improvements to the water and wastewater treatment systems as we continue to grow. So then we're not borrowing money as often, or we're not bonding money, which also has a cost to it. We're simply saving money, much like a homeowner would, for those major improvements that you encounter with property ownership. Other enterprise funds we have, solid waste. We call it solid waste. A lot of people call it the landfill. It's garbage collection. Again, we set aside small amounts of money incrementally, annually, for those major projects. And if anybody's been out to the landfill lately, you've seen what a major project looks like at the landfill. There is a tremendous hole in the ground now for the next several years worth of waste collection and disposal at the landfill. Other enterprise funds, the airport. The airport does very well. It functions off of federal grants. It obviously functions off of fees and charges for the airlines that utilize the services at the airport. And again, they've got a very clear financial plan that will guide them over the next several years as they look to continue to grow. It's the other departments, though, the general fund departments, where we do rely more on property tax. And really, when we talk about general fund, one of the first things that comes to mind is public safety. Police, fire, 911, emergency communications, the department we refer to as CENCOM. Those are key pieces to a thriving community, and those departments are not cheap. I often tell people that we don't collect enough in property tax to fully fund those three departments. So in other words, it costs us more to support the police department, the fire department, and 911 emergency communications than we are able to collect in property tax. When you say that out loud, it becomes a pretty staggering realization that, yeah, I understand people get upset about property tax, and it's often a topic of discussion when the legislature is in session. It's a topic of discussion when the general public is working with the commission as well. But in reality, these are 24/7, 365 operations, and a good portion of that, the cost of supporting those departments is quite honestly staff. And if we're looking at trying to make significant reductions in property tax collections, we honestly need to be talking about the levels of service. And what do we mean by that? It's the service that we provide. We are here as government. We do things that other businesses do not do. There are no private businesses out here taking raw water from the Missouri River and treating it and turning it into safe, reliable drinking water, or honestly, water to suppress a fire. So when government has to do these things, we do them as efficiently as possible. And I understand that there can be some scrutiny there. But I think a realization from the commission last night is that we are a very lean organization. Yes, we are a large organization. We're one of the top 10 employers in our community. But at the same time, there aren't a lot of frills. There's not a lot of fluff. We're getting by on some of the things that we have had for many years.
And I think that, Jason, the message that came through loud and clear last night was, and I heard the word a lot, was sustainability. And that was the mission of the budget committee, is to, we just have to make sure that we can continue the services that the city provides. So that was the vision as you're going into 2021. The bottom line is to make that happen. The budget committee came out with a recommendation to increase taxes, increase property taxes, which nobody wants to talk about. Nobody wants to even approve it. There's no question about that. It's not the desire of the committee or the commission to go that way, but that's basically, I think, the way it came down. And the way I understood it, brought down to the level of property, and it would come out to about $232 for a year for a $274,000 home, which is our average price right now in Bismarck. So that's kind of, you know, bottom lining it, that's the committee recommendation. And that's where the discussion kind of started, was, okay, we don't really like this, what can we do? And I think that if you could tell us what was that direction then back to budget committee last night.
Sure. So the message that we received from the budget committee was, okay, we understand that there's likely a need to increase property taxes. We just simply can't sustain the level of service that we've achieved, and quite honestly, that the public expects at this point. So the commissioners are looking for some potential options. Is it one large increase this year, or is it two manageable increases this year and then another one next year? And there was some direction. Commissioner Splonskowski, the newest commissioner, suggested that we could trim a little more, and we'll take a look at that. But you also heard Commissioner Zenker say last night that he's pored over the budget several times and really can't see how we can cut in any other areas. And his reference was, we have roads and streets division within the Public Works Department. So they're out fixing potholes and crack sealing and, of course, snow plowing and street sweeping. Those are some of the major activities we see. Some of those operators are being asked to use equipment that, quite honestly, is older than I am. Mm-hmm. We have pieces of equipment that have been around in our fleet for four decades, and that's just phenomenal. Now, not every piece of equipment is 40 years old, but some of the major snow removal equipment is more than 20 years old. That stuff was purchased in 2000 when snowgates became a thing. So we need to make adjustments and purchase new equipment from time to time.
Right. The other thing I heard a lot last night being repeated is, we can't keep kicking the can down the road. And you might find some areas to cut, such as equipment replacement, that put it off for another couple of years. But again, you're kicking the can down the road. If it needs to be replaced, what does that end up costing in the long run when you have a large piece of equipment breaking down in the middle of a situation or a blizzard or that type of thing? That's not a good situation to be in either. So bottom line, budget committee is going back to the table and take another look at it. Something may have to give in this process, and it'll come back to the commission again. The good news is that you started a little earlier than normal.
Correct.
So you have a little more time to go after this and to see if it can be kind of cooked down a little bit, tighter, to make it a little more palatable for property owners as we look into the next year.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right to note that we did start earlier than usual. And we did that with very deliberate intentions. We knew that 2021 was going to be a difficult budget year. We've kicked the can so many times that there's holes in the can at this point, and we need to address those issues.
Well, and I think the other thing that probably doesn't need to be mentioned, but we will mention it, is that there are so many unknowns with the pandemic. You're watching sales tax revenue, you're watching lodging taxes, restaurant tax, those things coming in, and they're all being affected. And then there's the effect on commercial property in the community. Sounds like residential building and residential property sales are fairly healthy right now, but what is going to happen with commercial property? There's a lot of unknowns, and it's difficult to project. A big challenge this year, much more than normal, I think.
And you're absolutely right to know that some of those revenue streams that we're used to receiving grants or funding, whether it be federal or state dollars, those amounts are significantly less. And it's for all the reasons that you mentioned as well. Sales taxes down, state sales taxes down. We've talked a lot about roads and streets as a division within Public Works. A good portion of their annual funding comes from fuel sales. The state collects tax from statewide fuel sales and then distributes those funds throughout all the communities. Those distributions are down significantly in the last 5 years, but there's kind of an inverse relationship. As we lose funds from the state for the things that we're used to doing, we're being asked to do more of those things. As Commissioner Marquardt noted, we are a growing community. And what does that mean? That means we add more streets, we add more sidewalks, we add more lights and traffic signals and all of the things that require maintenance as we go. We just talked with the Public Works Director, Jeff Heinz, this morning. And so Jeff has been director of public works since 2007. In that time, we've added 60 center lane miles of streets in Bismarck. When we say center lane, that's only one pass with the snowplow. In most cases, it takes at least four passes with a snowplow. So really, when you say, well, we're plowing 60 more lane miles, we're actually plowing 240 more miles of street that we didn't have 13 years ago. And we've added zero staff and zero equipment to help with that. So we're going in different directions with needs and ability to support those needs. And if we want to continue to sustain this level of service, these are some of the decisions that will need to be made by the commission.
Yeah. And again, another phrase I heard, these are needs. These aren't wants. These aren't, we're sitting around dreaming up what we would like. These are equipment replacements for equipment that's been around a while and things that are needed, like a new big giant hole out in the landfill. So, So anyway, this will come back. We'll be discussing, you'll be discussing with the commission more than probably the next meeting. So we'll talk about it again, Jason. So
we appreciate that.
We're getting the signal from Josh. We're running a little bit tight here. So I wanted to jump into one more item, and that was fireworks. Another item that's come back on the agenda. And bottom line is no action really taken last night, looking for more information about the possibility of putting this on the ballot at some point for citizens to vote on. It seems like that's somewhat the direction at this point.
Right. And what we took from that last night, the discussion at the table, was that we will work with the county. The county controls the election, sets the dates and prints the ballots and all of that. So we need to know what those deadlines are for ballot language. If we were looking to add anything to the ballot, to the regular election in November, what is the drop-dead date in order for us to be able to do that? And then City Attorney Janelle Combs also indicated from the commission she would need direction on what type of language would we be voting on. Would it have timelines, deadlines, you know, days of operations, those sorts of things? So as we look into that, there will be a brief report at the next meeting on July 28th where Janelle will have that information and then take direction from the commission. It's possible we could see some language yet in November, but at the same time, we may need to wait until the next primary election, which would be June of 2022. Okay. The commission was mindful not to call a special election and not to have an incurred cost and to absorb some of those expenses, because we can't just simply tell the county, hey, we want to put this on the ballot. There comes a cost to all of that.
I thought it was interesting that every commissioner had said they had had quite a few people contact them about this, and it was generally pretty overwhelmingly obvious from most of those people that they said people were against it. Citizens were not in favor of within city limits. So it's interesting. It was kind of amusing that Nancy Guy said, even though she's wearing a mask at the grocery store, people are still stopping and talking to her about these issues. And fireworks seems to be a hot topic, an explosive topic, excuse me for the pun, right now. So just FYI, if people have a concern about it, contact your commissioner and talk to him about it. But this issue isn't over. We're going to hear about it again. You're coming back with more information for the commission, and we'll be talking about it again as well, Jason. So
yeah, absolutely. And I know the commissioners appreciate public input. It doesn't have to come only at a city commission meeting. All the commissioners, including the mayor, have email addresses that are bismarcknd.gov. If anyone's looking for those, they can find those on our website at, again, bismarcknd.gov. Yep. We've got a commission page. You can email them. Those emails go directly to their inboxes. They're not screened or filtered by staff. And I do know that the commissioners are very engaged and talk about the frequency and the number of citizens that do reach out. And that voice does matter. So if you're interested in this topic, on the side of in favor or against, it matters not to us, because I'll steal a line from Mandan's mayor, Tim Helbling. Any feedback is good feedback. If you have a thought on this, share your ideas and share your concepts with the commissioners. It will help them have a much more robust discussion at the table, and it'll give a clear direction for staff on how to move forward. So
that's good. All right. Thanks, Jason. We're going to say goodbye real quickly here. Thank you again for joining us.
You bet. Thanks, Mary.
Take care.
Sounds great.
All right. And thank you for joining us on this edition of City Current.
For more information on what was discussed in this episode of City Current, visit bismarcknd.gov or call 701-355-1300. If you have suggestions, comments, or issues you would like addressed in future episodes, contact us at info@freetv.org. This program airs on Government Access, Channel 2 and 602 in HD, or on Radio Access 102.5 FM. It's also available as a podcast on radioaccess.org and as a video viewing link at freetv.org. Thanks for tuning in to this edition of City Current.